Hello, and welcome to Anaphylaxis UK's Let's Talk About Allergies podcast, where we provide expert answers to common questions about allergies and anaphylaxis. Our goal is to offer valuable insights on how we can all work together to make life easier and safer for those living with allergies.
In today's episode, we are joined by Professor Helen Brough, Consultant in Paediatric Allergy and Immunology at Evelina London Children's Hospital, Professor at King's College London, and Founder and Director of Children's Allergy Doctors Private Paediatric Allergy Clinic. Professor Brough is a leading expert in allergy management and prevention and has dedicated her career to researching and supporting families affected by allergic conditions. Today, we'll be discussing the latest evidence on preventing allergies in children, including why early skincare matters, how and when to introduce allergenic food safely, and other practical steps parents can take to reduce their child's risk of developing allergies. Whether you're a parent, carer, or healthcare professional, this conversation is packed with practical advice and the most up-to-date science on allergy prevention.
Professor Helen, it's a pleasure and an honour to have you here. Many, many people will know who you are, a great deal of research and work that you've done over the years. So it's a real pleasure for us to have you on one of these podcasts. For those that don't know you, I wonder if you'd mind just telling people a little bit about yourself and what's got you into this area.
Thanks so much, Simon. I'm delighted to be on this podcast from Anaphylaxis UK. And I think you're doing such amazing work getting the important messages out to families through these podcasts. So my name's Helen Brough. I'm a consultant in paediatric allergy at the Evelina London Children's Hospital at Guy's and St Thomas's NHS Foundation Trust. I'm also a professor at King's College London, and I'm doing my research into food allergy prevention at King's College London and Guy's and St Thomas's Hospital. I'm also the founder and director of Children's Allergy Doctors, which is an award-winning private paediatric allergy clinic located in Marylebone. And the reason why I got into allergy is because I've seen firsthand the suffering that it can cause children and families through my work as a paediatrician. And then I was always very interested in being able to provide research to move forward the care for patients directly. And then when my daughter was born, she then developed eczema herself. And I was able to effectively prevent her from developing food allergy using a lot of the research that I've used. And she still has some eczema and still has some hay fever and asthma, but I'm able to have seen firsthand what it's like to live with a child that has allergic conditions, but also how to successfully prevent food allergy. And this is my passion, really, to provide simple steps of proven methodology to the world for people to be able to do this themselves and be empowered to be able to prevent food allergy in their child.
So you've also developed a series of practical guides for parents on preventing food allergies, which we'll link in the description under this podcast. Why do you think there is such an interest in preventing food allergies in children? And why is it such an important public health issue?
I'm really glad you've asked that question, Simon. The reason is that food allergies are rising rapidly and they are affecting millions of children worldwide. In the UK alone, hospital admissions for anaphylaxis have increased by over 600% in the last 20 years. And it's so important to know the simple, effective strategies. And there's a lot of confusion out there. And that's why I've created this simple, practical guide for parents to cut through the confusion and provide clear science-backed steps to help families use this information at home so that they can be empowered to prevent food allergy in their child and also help them with managing eczema, asthma, and hay fever.
So when we talk about children who are high risk for allergies or babies who are high risk for allergies, what does this actually mean? Who are these babies that might be at high risk?
There's a lot of research that's gone into this now, and the most important factor for the development of food allergy is having early onset eczema, particularly severe early onset eczema. These children have a 5 to 6 times increased risk of developing food allergy compared to those without eczema. And that's why these babies will benefit from targeted prevention strategies, especially around how their skin is effectively managed and protected, and around introducing allergenic foods in the right way and at the right time. So being able to identify risk early gives families a head start so that they can prevent food allergies before they begin.
So how does the eczema actually relate to the development of food allergies in babies? In your guide, you talk about your first point is about controlling eczema, and your second point is about sensitization, preventing sensitization through the skin. So do you mind just giving a bit of background on how does eczema relate to the development of an allergy, and what does sensitization through the skin actually mean?
A sensitization is a process where the body's immune system recognizes something and decides how it's going to respond to that particular protein. So it can either decide that it's going to have a tolerant response to that, and it's going to produce the right kind of tolerant antibodies, or the immune system can decide, I'm going to see this as a foreign pathogen that I need to try and fight. And that, in the context of sensitization, means that the immune system gets sensitized to this protein in a way that when it gets exposed to it again, then it is developing an allergic response and it's trying to expulse that protein from the body. So, for example, harmless proteins like grass pollen or protein from peanut could be seen as something that's an invading pathogen. And so the body then tries to get rid of it. And that's the constitution of an allergic response, an allergic reaction. So becoming sensitized through the skin is a hypothesis which has now been shown in lots of animal models and also in lots of research in humans, which looks at the fact that when you have inflamed, disrupted skin barrier, which is what you get when you have eczema, then you can have allergens like peanut proteins, which we have quantified in the environment, going through the skin and then making the immune system see that as a pathogen. And what happens then is that the immune system in the skin then takes that into the lymph nodes near the skin and decides that it's going to start developing an allergic response to that particular food or other protein. So that is why when we have damaged skin or inflamed, disrupted skin barrier in a child that has eczema, there's the opportunity for things in the environment to get through that skin and then promote the development of sensitization first, where the immune system recognizes it, and then after that, allergy. And one of the things that I often mention is that when I see families in my clinic, they'll say to me, my child has never eaten peanut and has never eaten egg, but the first time I gave them peanut or egg, they had an allergic reaction. But the thing is that actually the child has been exposed to egg and peanut through the skin. So it's not the very first time they've seen egg and peanut, but it's not through the mouth. So what we want to be doing is we want to be exposing children to food allergens through the mouth and not through the skin.
What's the importance then of moisturising?
So the first thing I want to talk about is what to do if the child's skin is healthy, so there's no dryness and no eczema. In that situation, then less is more. So if the skin is healthy, you don't want to be doing too much to the skin in terms of moisturising or bathing. So absolutely less is more. Once the skin has dryness or eczema, then the skin is saying that it's got a bit of a problem. It's not able to protect from external environmental triggers, pollution, irritants, detergents, and also infections and allergens. What that means is that the skin needs a bit of help. And for that, what is really important is to use a good quality moisturizer to help the skin repair itself and to provide a protective layer on the skin. But it's really important that that's done in the right way, because otherwise, if moisturizers are applied in the wrong way, they can actually lead to sensitization to foods and they can lead to increased skin infections.
What do you mean in the right way, though?
So the really important thing to do is that when applying moisturizers onto the skin, it's very important that you're not inadvertently transferring more bacteria onto the skin. So it's very important to wash hands before applying the moisturizer onto a baby's skin. And also, very important that if the family are prescribed a pot or tub of ointment or cream that they never put their hand inside the pot, because we know from research that that introduces bacterial contamination in the pot, even if the parents have washed their hands, because it's a medium in which the bacteria like to grow. And then each time the parents put their hands into the pot and then apply the cream onto their baby's skin, they're applying bacteria onto the baby's skin. And that then makes the skin more itchy, makes the eczema more severe, can introduce a bacteria onto the skin called Staphylococcus aureus. And that then makes the skin even worse. And the more they moisturize, they're actually making their child's skin worse. And a lot of the time, they've just not been told not to put their hands inside the pots. The alternative is just to use a clean spoon. They can just run the clean spoon under boiling water to sterilize it, then take it out of the pot and use that moisturizer onto the child's skin after having washed their hands. The other thing I see a lot of parents do is instead of washing their hands, they put sanitizer on their hands first, and then they put the moisturizer on their hands and moisturize their baby. And that will irritate the child's skin because the sanitizer has 70% alcohol, and that will irritate the skin of the baby. So we know that if a child develops infected eczema, and applying bacteria onto the skin is more likely to lead to infected eczema, the child has a much higher risk of developing food allergy. And the reason for that is that particular bacteria that I mentioned, Staphylococcus aureus, has certain toxins that it produces to survive. And what that does is that when the immune system sees those toxins, it goes into a sort of hyper alert state. And then when it sees environmental foods, for example, like peanut or like egg, it's more likely to have that pro-allergic response. And there was actually data from the LEAP study which showed that children that were colonized with Staphylococcus aureus had more severe eczema. They were more likely to have difficulty in outgrowing their egg allergy, and it was actually more difficult for them to introduce peanut early and prevent peanut allergy from developing, which is what the LEAP study showed could be done effectively in the majority of children that introduce peanut early. And we can come on to that later. The second thing is that some moisturizers have got food oils in them. So there was some work done by Gideon Lack, where he looked at a large cohort of children from Bristol in the ALSPAC study, and he found that in children with eczema, if they had had creams applied to them that had peanut oil on them, which is called Arrakis oil, they were far more likely to develop peanut allergy. And so there are many natural creams out there at the moment that contain seed oils and nut oils. And the concern is that by applying these small amounts of the nut and seed proteins onto the skin, that their application of the moisturizer might in itself be predisposing that inflamed, disrupted skin barrier to developing an allergy to those foods, particularly if the child has not yet eaten that food. So once the child's eating that food regularly, that food is then being seen by the gut immune system. The baby will be thinking in its immune system, this is good, this is fine, I can tolerate this. However, if it's seen first through the skin when they have angry inflamed eczema, then the immune system is more likely to skew towards allergy.
When you say about parents washing their hands, presumably soap and water, but a soap without any other chemicals or any nut
Nut
oil in
oils.
it.
Yes, I would also say that for parents, it's very important that they also care for their hands, because washing your hands multiple times a day can actually harm the skin. So it's very important that they are washing their hands with a soap or detergent that is not abrasive. They can also use cream washes to wash their hands. And there are products that are antimicrobial that are like cream washers that they could also use, and that they take good care of their hands as well. I see, of course, the parents of children with eczema often have eczema themselves, and so I'm always very keen to try and help the parents protect their own skin as well.
So, how often should you be moisturizing a baby who has eczema? If they have more severe eczema, does that mean you should be moisturizing their skin more often?
Absolutely. So the NICE guidelines, they recommend moisturizing the skin in a child that has eczema at least twice a day. So that's morning and evening, especially after the bath. It's very important that the baby is moisturized on the face and the body. I have seen a lot of families where they moisturize only the body because they're worried about putting anything on the face. And that the way that you moisturize is very important as well. So the cream needs to be applied gently in the direction that the hair is going. It should not be rubbed in hard circular motions because that can irritate the hair follicles. And then you can get these little dots around where the hair follicles are. And also, the amount of moisturizer needs to be enough. So, baby should be getting through about 250 grams of moisturizing cream or ointment per week. And older children should be getting through 500 grams per week. And when there is a flare up, just as you said, it's important to moisturize even more frequently, bearing in mind the important factors with regards to not introducing infection, and doing it with the right type of moisturizer.
And is there a preferred method with regard to what type of cream or ointment you're using? Because I know you speak about ointments or creams. Is one better than the other? And does it depend on the eczema?
That's a great question. And there was actually a study recently that was done from Bristol looking at comparisons of lotions, creams, and ointments. And what they found was that in terms of managing the eczema, they were all equally effective. However, they found in terms of side effects that ointments were less likely to sting. So ointments are less likely to sting because they have less water in them and therefore fewer ingredients likely to cause irritation. And therefore, ointments are often preferred by some children and some parents. However, some children can actually find that the ointments make them too hot. And we know that heat is a big trigger for eczema, which is why I always recommend using cool baths of a maximum of 32 degrees centigrade for short periods of time. And also recommend trying to keep the room temperature where the baby's sleeping not too hot. It really depends on the child. And the family, they will find that the child or the family will prefer a cream or an ointment depending on how it suits the child's skin, depending on how quickly it gets absorbed into the skin, depending on how quickly the child feels that the skin is smooth and moisturized. Also, some people find that in the winter they may prefer ointments because it's a drier period of the year versus in the summer. They may prefer creams because it's a bit more hot, and so the creams are just more suited to that type of temperature.
There's the risk as well to children who have got some dry skin but haven't yet maybe been diagnosed as with eczema.
Yes, dry skin also carries a risk for developing
Right.
allergy. So, if the baby has dry skin, I would recommend starting to moisturize early. You don't need to have a formal diagnosis of eczema before moisturizing and being proactive, as dryness is an early warning sign for eczema. Again, it's very important to make sure that parents are using the right creams and not introducing infection.
So if a child has started to develop some dry skin in those early months, then this early moisturisation is key, and they don't necessarily need to, take the baby to the doctor. If they've just got a bit of dry skin, they can just start moisturising.
Yes, but they need to use moisturizers that are fragrance-free, that do not contain nut or seed oils in them, and they need to use them in the way that doesn't introduce infection into the child's skin.
Yeah, so all the tips you've spoken about earlier, that's great, thank you. And just for busy parents, do you have any practical tips that you could share to make these hand washing and skincare precautions part of their daily routine?
Yes, definitely. So, keeping moisturizers and spatulas in multiple locations in the house, also having them in a nappy bag so that you can moisturize when you're out and about. You can also coincide nappy changes with moisturization. So, as long as the parents are washing their hands after doing the nappy change or before, they can then apply the moisturizer. I think that's really important because it provides that opportunity. After the bath, it's very important to moisturise as well. So it's important to have all of the moisturisers and spatulas or spoons, depending on how you're doing it, or in fact, just buying a tube or a pump in those various locations.
In your guide, Helen, it mentions about avoiding the use of unnecessary antibiotics. How are antibiotics in early life? How do they affect the risk of developing allergies?
So there have been studies now that have shown that babies who receive antibiotics in their first year of life have an up to 20 to 30% higher risk of developing eczema and food allergies later on. And the reason for that is that antibiotics disrupt the gut microbiome. So antibiotics, when needed, are incredible. And as a society, we are so lucky to have them. So if they are needed, they are needed. But what is very important is that the use of antibiotics needs to be judicious, and only used when it is definitely needed, and not when it's not to protect the gut microbiome, because the antibiotics will not only kill off the bacteria that are causing an infection, they will also disrupt the gut microbiome. And that is not good for the development of eczema and subsequently food allergy, because often the skin is a reflection of what's going on in the gut.
So you'd mentioned there about this the gut microbiome. What is that? Is that what we hear about the kind of bacteria, the good bacteria in this inside us?
So the gut microbiome is an ecosystem of good bacteria which need fiber or prebiotics to feed on. The good bacteria have an incredibly important role to train the immune system in the right way so that we have a properly regulated immune system rather than a dysregulated immune system. And we know from studies that babies with a more diverse gut microbiome have a 40 to 60% lower risk of developing allergic disease. And the microbiome, which is healthy, comes from various things. It comes from the birth canal, it comes from the good bacteria in breast milk, it comes from having a wide variety of different foods in the weaning process because they provide the fiber for the good bacteria or prebiotics for the good bacteria, and that then increases the gut diversity and thereby prevents eczema and food allergy.
So your diet is important then throughout, pregnancy, breastfeeding, and during weaning because of, as you said, this variety of bacteria that we need in the gut. So I'm just wondering, do you have any tips to help parents who are in this stage to make sure that they are, doing enough for their gut microbiome to make sure that their baby's immune system is going to be as healthy as possible and hopefully, not developing any allergies?
Absolutely. And there are studies like the Pasture study that showed that increased fiber intake in the mother, fermented foods, and dietary diversity was associated with better immune outcomes for babies. And then there was a recent study published by Karina Venter and her team, which looked at dietary diversity during pregnancy and in the baby's first year of life. And what they found was that yogurt and vegetables were protective against all forms of allergies in the baby, but there were certain foods that were risk factors for allergic disease, and those included red meat, ultra-processed foods, grains, 100% orange juice, and cold cereals. So having a rich vegetable, fruit, fermented food diet during pregnancy was shown to be protective against allergies.
So, just going back to the use of antibiotics in infants, I'm just wondering, should parents ever be worried about their baby being prescribed antibiotics if they think it might not be absolutely necessary, just when we talk about them affecting the infant microbiome? Is it something parents should ever question? I can assume, they're safe. It's safe. They can trust their healthcare professional will only prescribe the antibiotics when really needed. But I'm just wondering, how common is it for unnecessary antibiotics to be given? And what advice would you give to parents who might be concerned about this after listening to your tips today about minimizing the use of antibiotics?
I think that antimicrobial stewardship is certainly widely known amongst healthcare professionals. I think in the UK, there have been significant efforts to promote awareness of only using antibiotics when they are necessary. I know, having had discussions with colleagues on the neonatal unit at St Thomas's Hospital, that they have now got multiple systems in place to ensure that babies and mothers only receive antibiotics if they meet certain clear criteria. That means that it is very likely that they do require antibiotics. So I think there's a lot of good work going on already. I do think that it is always good to have a conversation with the clinician and raise any concerns that you may have about any treatments that you're recommended, and then they can explain the rationale for why they are proposing a particular treatment, and then the family and the medical practitioner can make a shared decision.
Thank you. So you recommend introducing peanut and egg from 17 weeks in babies with eczema and around 6 months for others. What's the reasoning behind this?
Thank you for that. So the reasoning behind this is that children with eczema, as I mentioned before, are at much higher risk of developing peanut and egg allergy and other food allergies. And egg allergy is one of the earliest allergies that develops. And I unfortunately have seen too many children in my clinic who already at 4 months of age are allergic to egg or peanut. So what we want to be doing is trying to get those early allergens into the diet as soon as possible, particularly in children that have early onset severe eczema. And then the important thing is that they don't just introduce peanut and egg once, but that once it's been introduced into their diet, that they continue to have that on a regular basis, 2 to 3 times a week going forward. This is all based on studies such as the LEAP study, Learning Early About Peanut study, which I was part of, and the EAT study, which is Inquiring About Tolerance, which I was also involved in. And both were conducted at King's College London and Guy's and St Thomas's Hospital. And they showed that early introduction of peanut and egg into the diet were extremely effective at preventing these food allergies if done in the correct way, particularly if able to introduce those on a regular basis and on an ongoing basis. Now, the reason why we have the differentiation between 17 weeks and 6 months for children who are less at risk of developing peanut and egg allergy is because the guidelines for introducing solids from the World Health Organization state that introducing solids should be done at around 6 months of age and that children should be exclusively breastfed until that point. And so, for the majority of children who are not at risk of developing food allergy or have a very, very low risk of developing food allergy, we recommend doing just that. In the children that are high risk because of eczema, or already have another food allergy, we recommend introducing peanut and egg in the right way from 17 weeks of age, as long as the child is developmentally ready, i.e., able to sit with some support, able to keep their head still, and able to take the food in their mouth without pushing it out of their mouth and interested in having solids. That is in accordance with the weaning or introduction of solids guideline from the British Society for Allergy and Clinical Immunology, which is available online for both healthcare professionals and for parents in both formats.
And should the parent or carer be checking with a healthcare professional before introducing the allergens if they're introducing them from around 17 weeks to make sure the baby is ready? Or can they just start doing that if they think their baby might be high risk and they believe that their child is ready for the foods?
And that's a great question. And I think that in terms of starting first foods, there's no need to check with a healthcare professional. So people can start them on vegetables, first tastes, etc. In terms of introducing allergenic foods, the risk of the child already being allergic to a food will increase depending on the severity of the child's eczema. So, children that have severe eczema are at greatest risk of already being allergic to for example, peanut or egg. However, allergy testing can help identify individual infants at higher risk, but systematically screening all infants with more severe eczema is not currently available in most areas, and it may not be effective. So families may wish to seek advice from a healthcare professional with expertise in allergy if their child has severe eczema, but this should not delay introduction of common allergenic foods beyond 12 months of age.
So if they are concerned, if their baby has got eczema and perhaps they would like to start introducing at that point before 6 months, but perhaps a healthcare professional that they're working with hasn't seen that recent data or that guidance from the British Society of Allergy and Clinical Immunology, do you have any tips for them? You know, how could they approach a healthcare professional to advocate for this evidence-based care if they do encounter that outdated advice?
Well, I think given that the British Society for Allergy and Clinical Immunology has produced this wonderful summary on preventing food allergy in higher risk infants, which has also been ratified by the British Dietetic Association Specialist Group, that printing this off and taking it along with them to their consultation would be helpful.
So, if a parent is introducing these foods earlier than the 6 month mark, if their baby has got eczema, should they be worried about introducing these foods like eggs and peanuts? What is the likelihood that they might actually have a serious reaction at this stage, of infancy?
The likelihood of their baby having a serious allergic reaction is very small. So, what I would always recommend is that when they start giving egg or peanut or other allergenic foods, that they start with very small doses and that they give them to the baby when the baby's well and earlier on in the day so that they can monitor the baby. And in that way, they are providing the best possible chance for the baby to start introducing the foods in a successful way, and then they can build up themselves every day until they're giving the right amount of that food to prevent food allergy. So the earlier you introduce the food, the less likely the baby will be allergic to that food because there's less time for them to become sensitized. What I would say is that they should first introduce a non-allergenic foods such as a vegetable. And then they can use that to mix, for example, the peanut butter with vegetable that they know the child has tolerated, because peanut butter shouldn't be given neat to a baby because it's a choking hazard. So they could use some of the vegetables that they already know are fine to mix with the allergenic foods to make them into thin purees, because from 4 to 6 months of age, babies will require thin purees to not have a choking risk, and they would need to be spoon-fed because they wouldn't have the ability to feed themselves at that point.
Sure. And we have a podcast that we've recently recorded on weaning with allergies, sorry, weaning and allergies that you can find on our Spotify and Amazon podcast apps. So if people would like to find out more about weaning and how to introduce allergens, then they can have a listen to that one as well. So what advice, Helen, do you have for those parents who are introducing these new foods to infants who are at higher risk? We hear about using spoon feeding for infants who have eczema to prevent that sensitization through the skin, as you spoke about earlier. So, should spoon feeding always be used if a baby has eczema?
What I would recommend is that for allergenic foods, such as peanuts and egg, that it is better to use a spoon so that most of it goes in the mouth rather than on the skin. Because we want most of the food allergen to get into the gut so that the gut immune system can see it and see that this is something normal, and then the body will promote a tolerogenic response to that food. For other foods, like crushed courgettes, for example, it's fine for the baby to crush it with their hands and put it all over their face. That's absolutely fine. But for allergens, I would recommend using spoon feeding and not baby-led weaning. In terms of eczema on the face and on the body, I would recommend trying to get the eczema under control, especially on their face. And what happens often, what I see in my clinic, is that parents try to introduce different foods into the child's diet. And then they'll notice, especially if their child has eczema, that they get develop red patches on their face, and they think that that's an allergic reaction, and they lose confidence. And so then they pull back quite a lot, and that can often delay weaning. In terms of trying to prevent that, I'll often recommend using an ointment to protect the skin barrier around the face and neck when they're introducing foods into the baby, but making sure, of course, that they are not putting hands inside any tubs or pots of ointment and always using a clean spoon. The other thing I would recommend is that when the baby is introducing solids, that they are clothed rather than naked, so that not all of the food is falling onto the child's skin. So that can also help. The other thing that I always reiterate is that it's not enough to give peanut once. You have to continue to give it regularly. In fact, some evidence that only giving peanut once might increase the risk of developing peanut allergy, because what might happen is that in a family that maybe don't eat a lot of peanut butter, they think, oh, I need to get peanut into my baby's diet. They bring a jar of peanut butter into the home, they give their baby some peanut butter, and then they don't give it again, but other members of the family start eating it, and then there's peanut in the environment, which is going through the baby's skin rather than through the gut by the baby eating it themselves. And there was a very important study done by Adam Fox and Gideon Lack, which showed that increased household peanut consumption was a risk factor for the development of peanut allergy in babies. But if the baby was eating peanut themselves, then having other members of the family eating peanut did not increase the risk of peanut allergy in the baby.
So, how often should they be having these foods then, once they're introduced? Foods such as peanut or other nuts and eggs?
Yes, so ideally 2 to 3 times a week, and they want to be giving reasonable amounts of that food. Based on the LEAP study gave a teaspoon of peanut butter, which was then mixed with vegetables, so it would end up being more than a teaspoon in all, 3 times a week, and that over the space of 5 years was able to prevent peanut allergy by 81% at 5 years of age. And it's actually now been shown to continue to protect the children into adolescence, even when the children were then advised to avoid peanut for a year and then were advised they could eat peanut as they wanted. So the LEAP study has had multiple publications now to show that this efficacy is long lasting. So I think that's really important to give peanut 3 times a week. Then, in terms of egg, generally we recommend that children have between half and a whole egg spread over a week, ideally given 3 times a week. What people find is that sometimes using boiled egg can be quite difficult for the child to accept. I recommend pureeing that and mixing it with vegetables, or if that is still not palatable, parents can then try well-cooked scrambled egg.
Okay. And can I ask why it's just recommended to introduce the peanut and the egg early?
Well, I recommend introducing peanut and egg first, because those are the allergens that are some of the earliest food allergens that develop in infancy. And then after that, I will also recommend introducing other allergens depending on what the family eat in their home. So there are some families that eat a lot of nuts at home and some families that don't, but maybe they eat a lot of legumes at home. So I will always advise that whatever the family are eating at home, that the children should be eating those same foods apart from honey, which is not recommended under the age of 1. And also, obviously, a baby needs to be having foods that don't contain too much salt and too much sugar.
So, for parents who might be introducing allergens to their infant at home, and who might have either an allergy themselves or they might have another child with an allergy, do you have some tips for those families?
Yes, that's a very important point, and I mention it also in my leaflet, which is that if the family think that they're able to give the child, for example, egg and peanut regularly in the home without that posing a significant risk for another family member, then it's good to do that. However, if, for example, a parent or a sibling has a severe allergic reaction to peanut, and they think that it's going to be quite difficult to get peanut into the diet at home, then my recommendation is actually just to keep peanut out of the home completely. Because what you don't want is you don't want to be giving a little bit of peanut here and there, once every 3 months when you can, because that may actually increase the risk of peanut allergy. So either get it in regularly and properly, or I would just keep peanut out of the house if there's a family member that has a severe peanut allergy.
So if you can't get that in regularly, then
Then
don't
don't.
just start introducing it,
Yeah.
sporadically every.
Yeah.
Okay. And could they do that at someone else's house or at another family member's house? If let's say, they're with their grandparents once a week, would that be enough if the grandparent fed them the peanut, once a week when they went over?
It might be enough. We don't know the exact frequency of peanut introduction that's required. The data that we have is based on the LEAP study and the EAT study. And so we know, for example, with the EAT study, they did some modelling, and the minimum amount of peanut that was required for peanut allergy prevention was 2 grams of peanut protein, which is about a teaspoon of peanut butter per week. So that was what they found with the modelling data from the EAT study. So I would have to provide that answer that a minimum of a teaspoon of peanut butter per week is all I could say that we have evidence for. There is another study called the Preventadal study, and what they did was they took close to 4,000 babies and they randomized them to skincare, early introduction of food allergens, and a combination of those two things. And the early introduction of food allergens was doing first tastes of peanuts and egg and other foods from 3 months of age, so really young. And they were doing first tastes by literally just putting some peanut butter onto the tip of the finger and that putting that into the baby's mouth. And we don't know exactly what quantity of peanut was put through that method because it wasn't quantified in the study. But they showed that actually by doing frequent small tastes of peanut butter from 3 months of age, that that was also effective at preventing peanut and egg allergy. So there's that data as well.
Right, thank you, Helen. Sorry, Helen. So, if we could just go back to making sure that eczema is well controlled before starting to introduce the allergenic foods. We've spoken about creams and ointments, and making sure you're not using anything that has any food oils in it, any nut oils or seed oils, and making sure you're using something that is appropriate for your baby's skin. I'm just wondering when it comes to very severe eczema. And steroid creams, steroid ointments, and if this is something that would generally be used on an infant who might have serious eczema.
Thanks for that, Mary. And yes, I agree that it's really important to get the basics right first so that you're using the right moisturizers in the right way, using the right bathing practices. And then after that, if the child still has eczema that is inflamed, red, and itchy, then it will not be enough just to use moisturizers, and some form of anti-inflammatory topical therapy will be required. Now, using topical steroids in a judicious way, under medical supervision, using the right amount of steroids on the skin has been shown to be safe, as long as it is done in the right way. There are now, however, other non-steroid based anti-inflammatory creams that are licensed in the UK from 3 months of age. And so I will often see a child who has significant eczema, and I will start them on topical steroids, but then I will rapidly move them on to a non-topical steroid anti-inflammatory cream.
Okay. And if a child does have serious eczema with the cracking and perhaps the scabbing of the skin, I assume they should be really seeing an allergy specialist at that point to make sure the eczema is well controlled. Or is that also something that a GP might be able to help with? At what point, with the severity of the eczema, should you be actually seeing an allergy specialist?
Well, I think the first thing when it comes to eczema is to make sure you're getting the basics right. And a lot of that information is actually available on really reputable websites. So eczmacareonline.org is one of them that I would recommend people go on to. It's free, you don't even need to register, and it's interactive. So it's really, really good, and it's all based on research. So that would be my first recommendation. Then, yes, in terms of getting topical steroids, these are often need to be prescribed. So parents would need to see a medical professional. This can certainly be managed by the GP initially. And then after that, eczema can be managed by dermatologists, by paediatricians, by allergists. If parents think that their child may have allergies or is at higher risk of allergies and they want to be assessed for allergies, then yes, they can be seen by an allergist. But in terms of finding an allergist, depending on where one is in the UK, it may be easier to find an allergist in some areas than others.
Sure. So, are there any common myths or misconceptions about allergy prevention that you would like to address?
Yes. So the first one is, I think that there was advice that was promoted up until 2009 that delaying allergens was able to help with preventing food allergy. And although that has now been shown to be inaccurate, unfortunately, there's still quite a lot of cultural memory about that. And so there are still some people who think that it's important to wait to introduce allergens until the baby is older. And that is definitely a myth. And I would recommend introducing allergens early into the diet. The second will be that there was old advice that children should be introduced to a new food every 3 days. And that, unfortunately, means that if you do that, it's going to take so long to get dietary diversity and introduce allergens into the diet that it's going to be counterproductive. And one thing I wanted to mention was some research that was done by Karina Venter and her team that showed that for each food that is introduced by 6 months of age, there's an 11% reduction in food allergy over 10 years. And they also showed from this UK birth cohort study that for each food allergen introduced by 12 months of age, there was a 33% reduction in food allergy over 10 years. So, in order to be able to get lots of foods into the diet, you need to be introducing foods more quickly than every 3 days. So, what I recommend is every meal they can introduce a new food, such as broccoli or courgette or sweet potato. So, every meal they introduce a new food, and once they've done it once, then they can add that to the safe foods. When it comes to food allergens, I would recommend doing one a day so that they can
Okay.
just child for the rest of the day. So it's really about speeding up rather than slowing down. And it doesn't have to be a huge amount of the food. So dietary diversity, all the different wonderful fiber that's coming through fruits and vegetables can be in small doses. So it can be very small amounts. The other thing is I want to just highlight the benefits of home cooked foods as the main staple diet for the baby. And there are many ways to make that easier with batch cooking and putting cubes of that home cooked food in the freezer so that they can be popped out with every meal. And that's very important from a gut microbiome perspective, from a fiber perspective, and also from a nutrition perspective. And then the other thing that was previously advised, which again is in the cultural memory, was that mothers who are pregnant should avoid various foods while breastfeeding. And that has also not been shown to be protective against food allergy. So that is also a myth. So what's important in pregnancy is a wide variety of foods, and as I mentioned before, vegetables in particular and yogurt in particular.
Just on that topic of avoiding foods during pregnancy, and that myth there, I was just wondering if someone doesn't eat a certain food during pregnancy, for example, because they're lactose intolerant or they're celiac, is there any link between the likelihood of their child developing an allergy of a food that they haven't eaten because the baby hasn't seen it? Is there any link there between pregnancy and the development of a food allergy? If, for example, a mother doesn't eat a certain food.
There's actually no studies that have specifically looked at that, to my knowledge. There are studies that have conflicting studies that have shown that eating allergens during pregnancy protects. There are other ones that show it makes no difference, that other ones say that it confers risk. So there's absolutely no consensus on that. There is actually a study ongoing at the moment called the PREGNUT study, where they are looking at the maternal diet in pregnancy and breastfeeding, and they are randomizing some of these families to have a high peanut containing diet, which is 60 peanuts a week, and a high egg containing diet, which is 6 eggs a week, versus a standard diet from 23 weeks gestation until the breastfed infant is 4 months of age. And so I think we'll get more information from this trial.
Amazing. So, what's the most important message that you would like parents to take away from today's discussion about preventing allergies in children?
Well, I want them to know how much power they have and that they can reduce their baby's allergy risk. They can, with the right steps, prevent food allergy in their baby, especially if their baby has eczema. And so, using the right application of moisturizers and the right anti-inflammatory treatments and the right early introduction of food allergens into the baby's diet can help prevent food allergy. And so, if they have any questions about this, there's a lot of resources. There's the guide that I've produced. There's the BSAI guidelines. They can speak to their healthcare professional, but they are able to do this, and they should feel empowered to be able to prevent food allergy in their baby.
And what about for healthcare professionals who might be listening? What could they do to support families who might be at high risk of having an infant with food allergies?
I think healthcare professionals have a huge role to play in this, not just GPs, but health visitors, midwives. I think their first messages to parents are extremely important. So they can familiarise themselves with the BSAI guidance, and they can also educate families that they come across to ensure that they know that introducing peanut and egg early into the diet can help prevent the development of these food allergies from developing. Also, I think healthcare professionals can educate families on how to manage eczema, point them in the direction of great online free resources such as eczmacareonline.org, and they can advise them that it's important to manage the eczema well, not just for the sake of the eczema to prevent skin infections or skin thickening or changes in the pigment of the skin, but also to prevent food allergy.
Thank you so much, Helen. That's been really good today. We've covered lots of different things. And as I mentioned, we will link to the guide in our podcast description.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed doing this podcast.
We hope you enjoyed tuning in to today's podcast on this very important topic. To make sure you don't miss any episodes, you can subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcast app, including Spotify and Apple Music. Finally, be sure to follow us on social media at Anaphylaxis UK to join in the conversation and let us know if there are any questions you would like us to answer next time.